Ultimately, I did not feel altogether well with reference to my nervous system. Possibly Lia detected my state of mind and added, "Today you will have a singular experience that no other terrestrial has lived, but you will need to get control of yourself. You have almost done it already." I looked at my watch. It was 2010. I still had time. I thought at that moment of refusing, I could have done it, I affirmed to myself, with the energy within me, but I did not do it. On some pretext I took my departure from my friend a short time later, and drove my car straight to the Parque de la Reforma, where I took the road to Lomas of Chapultepec, turning the wheel in the direction indicated. Again that torment appeared in my mind. Something, an instinct, had gained control with the help of that being more powerful than myself. I resisted going, but no external self had nevertheless decided to accede to that strange appointment. I wanted to say no, but my lips only pronounced yes. Yes. By the road to the Desierto de los Leones, I had the sensation that I was approaching the place. Then I no longer had control of my auto. It was advancing by itself. A feeling of terror overcame me. Now, as I remember, I can compare it to that sensation felt by those who have been captured. Again that voice in my brain ordering me to calm my emotions. The auto had left the highway and was advancing over a bumpy field road. I noticed then that there were few houses anywhere before I was surrounded by them, and they were becoming ever more distant. Around 21:45 the car stopped. I looked around me. All was darkness. I turned on the interior light of the vehicle and left the headlights on to illuminate the road. All was thick darkness. I took out a cigarette and activated the car lighter. I inhaled the smoke deeply and sat there, smoking to calm myself little by little. The minutes seemed to pass like centuries. Finally, more or less like 10 at night, I saw that someone was approaching from behind the car. It was her. I opened the door, took her by the hand and got out. We walked straight toward a small hill that was like 2 kilometers from that place. I went the whole way taken by the hand. Anybody would have thought we were lovers or something like that. To one side of that hill we stopped. Suddenly, before my eyes, a spaceship, bigger than the first, was materializing, slowly, before my surprised eyes that refused to believe what they were seeing. Once the ship appeared complete, 2 men of friendly face came out and looked candidly at me. I recognized one of them. Yes, I had seen him in San Bons with Lia. They both introduced themselves and then they invited me to go up into the ship. Once inside, I could see that this one was almost identical, with some differences, from the first one I had seen. Also, this one had a decontamination roan, for debacterialization, as they called it. Once I had changed my clothes, Lia informed me that I must pay attention to all that I would see, since that night was going to be the only one, like it, for me. We all took seats and the ship began the flight. During the departure they explained to me that we were flying over the United States toward Alaska, to the northeast of Canada. Below, I could see clearly, despite the darkness of the night, the valley of the Yukon. The south, a chain of volcanic rocks whose peaks rose to more than 6,000 meters elevation, covered with snow. The ship stopped suspended in the air at or less 3,000 meters altitude, exactly to the south of Kodiak and the inland sea, above the Pacific Ocean. I was informed that many miles from there, a submarine was prepared to carry out its atomic exercises, and that it was equipped with depth charges, but that night, it possibly had to be removed from that place and suspend its exercises because the Royal Air Force, utilizing a bomber, would detonate an artifact in that place. I saw that the radar, viewing screen aboard the spaceship, captured the position of the submarine, and though it was going away now at high velocity, it appeared in the viewing screen and I could see that it belonged to the United States. The 2 friends of Lia had located the exact place in which they were going to carry out a very important nuclear exercise. The bomb they were going to detonate had atomic force superior to that which up to this time had been tested. The extraterrestrial ship performed some reconnaissance turns, advancing to above the site selected. I was surprised. For a moment I feared that the Mexican radars would detect us and then could kill us. Yet that did not happen. Lyra reminded me that they were using their negativizer of light and frequency. Around midnight, two bombers of the Air Force appeared in the sky. At that moment I believed that those were the last minutes of my life. One of those fighter bombers released its deadly cargo. At the moment that my friends focused the screen on the place where they had released that lethal heavy artifact, precisely on the site, I heard a whistle in the distance and then the motors of the aircraft could be heard beckoning ever more distant. The city, scarcely illuminated by the weak reflection of the stars, shock and a great noise drowned out the turbulence of those cold waters, and could be heard for miles around. Our ship advanced slowly toward the place in an act that I considered suicide. But Lyra calmed me. At that moment, a great din could be heard. Upon looking at Lyra in an expectant attitude, she explained, "It is the liberation of the atoms." At 2,000 meters of altitude, the two men, who during this whole time had not lost a single detail of what had occurred, deployed and began to activate an enormous suction device. Lyra explained, "We must aspirate all of the atomic potency before it disperses over the surface. In this manner we can eliminate the maximum of terrestrial contamination." I don't know how long this operation lasted, but it seemed to me that it could have been carried on for almost an hour. I believe that I understood that they also used an atomic neutralizer. At the end of this operation, the ship rose ever higher until it came almost to the Van Allen belt. It stopped before passing this space barrier, and activated a system of aperture. We went out beyond the belt and then the same ship, utilized a system with which they closed the entrance point. This, said Lyra, was to prevent release of the atmosphere so necessary for terrestrial life. Thousands of kilometers beyond, we released the lethal cargo already neutralized. Once they had completed this maneuver, the men and Lyra looked at me. They were breathing laboriously, but not for the pressure of space, nor for lack of atmosphere, since the ship was equipped with a special atmospheric generator, but for the importance of those key moments for human survival. 8. I felt better, possibly because I knew that I was protected by people such as these. Upon return to Earth, they explained that they had been doing the same since the nuclear experiments began on this planet. When we descended, precisely in the place in which the extraterrestrial appointment began, my nerves gave way and I began to cry like a child. Lyra said it was logical, that many feelings had been found to emerge that night. My tears continued as I looked at my watch. It had stopped at 12:30 that night. Lyra helped me get to car. I got in it. The moon slowly appeared from behind the dark clouds and illuminated the field. I looked up at the sky but could not see the ship. I started the vehicle and turned, leaving that place and headed for the Nevado de Toluca. In the morning, the caretakers of the park found me at the foot of the mountain. The sun was rising in the east when I first saw them. I was being observed by four curious eyes peering at me through the windshield. They looked surprised. Then I opened the car window and heard them asking me if I felt all right. With a whisper I said yes, that I was all right. Surely they thought that I had came there drunk and that I had fallen asleep because it was impossible for me to return. I didn't tell them anything, only stated the motor and left there straight for Mexico City. I arrived at my house around 7 in the morning of that Sunday, which seemed to me the most marvelous of my life. I went to bed to rest, my wife having already awakened. It was obvious, I must say, that she was visibly irritated, but I did not have the necessary valor to explain that experience, which I have probably been the only mortal to have lived.